Hey, welcome back to our three ideas in 30 minutes. I think tonight Jason is the winner with the relish, overflowing, oozing out.
Nice.
And we appreciate it. Although I did just hear something astonishing. Maybe those who are listening will submit their feedback. But apparently hot dogs and peanut butter. Is that what you just said? Hot dogs and peanut butter is a thing. I'm just saying, I'm not a foodie, so I'm not holding in the food world. But to me, that sounds utterly disgusting and nauseating.
Which country is this?
But I'm not. Hey, listen. I tell my kids all the time, you can't knock it until you try it. So if someone has tried hot dogs, maybe next week, Junior, maybe we'll have peanut butter here next week and we'll dare someone to have a hot dog with peanut butter. But until then, Jason Asher is our winner tonight. Our learning tonight is very generously sponsored by Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak, and gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS. We are very grateful to the Fedaks for all of their support and for their sponsorship of our shir. Our shir tonight is also Lealias Neshama Hinda Bas Ramordechai, who we'll speak about a little bit at the end of the shir, Hindi Ginsburg, whose yurtzeit was today. So our learning should be an aliyah for her neshama, and as always, an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Tila Bas Gavriel Pinchas. Okay, tonight's idea first comes from the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim, of course, in this week's parsha, we have Shiras Hayam, the Jewish people cross through the Yam Suf, and then when they sing Shiras Hayam, which we say every single morning, we say the pasuk Nachita Bechazdecha Amzuga Alta, which, according to Art Scroll, which is, of course, the definitive translation, Art Scroll translates it as, with your kindness, you guided this people that you redeemed. Okay, Nachita Bechazdecha Amzuga Alta, with your kindness. Again, who's the kindness talking about? Hashem. Hashem, in other words, we were not worthy of being redeemed. We were not, had no merit for Geula, but Hashem, because of your chesed, because of your kindness, so you guided us through redemption. That's Pashup Shan in the Pasuk. That's what we read every single morning. That's what we read in Shiras Hayam. Zach the Chafetz Chaim, quoting the Tana of Eliyahu. He says, Kesha Yisrael b'Mitzrayim, niskabsu kulam v'yashru yachad. The Jewish people in Mitzrayim, says the Chafetz Chaim, had a conundrum. They sat around at their table and they were wondering, how is it that we are going to be redeemed? Mishum, because they really had no zchuyos. So what were they going to do that was going to make them worthy of getting redeemed? So what do they do? Mishum shayu kulam ba'aguda achas v'karsu bris yachad. So they all made a deal with each other. Shiyasu gmilas chasadim zemzeh. They said, we have nothing, we have no zchuyos, we have no merits. So they get together and they say, how about this? If we can't do anything else worthwhile, again, Chazal tells that they were at a 49th level of impurity, they said, why don't we at least do chesed with each other? And if we at least display kindness with each other, maybe in the zchus, maybe in the merit of our kindness towards each other, we will merit the geula. I'm going to write about in the weekly next week, and please God, it'll be published elsewhere as well, that I've quoted this in the past, that Rav Shlomo Hoffman asked his Rebbe, Rav Isaac Sher, he said, how do you expect yeshiva bachrim to do chesed? We have no money. We're in yeshiva. We have no parnasa. So Rav Isaac Sher looked back at him and said, you think you need money to do chesed? There's opportunities for chesed all around us. You could hold the door for someone. You could smile at someone. You could be kind to someone. You could call someone who's homebound. There are a million acts of chesed that cost no money at all. So that's essentially what the Tana of Eliyahu says happened in Mitzrayim. The Jewish people realized they had no zchuyos. They had no merits whatsoever. So they say, you know what? Maybe if we are kind to one another, maybe if we do chesed with one another, then we will be worthy of the geula. Says the Chafetz Chaim on page number 2, that is the understanding. He says, v'inei tzarech lahavin, ma inyano shel krisas bis lasos gemilas chasadim. What was the purpose of them doing chesed one with another? Ela ha'inyan hu, where you see my underlines. When the Jewish people said they have no merits to be worthy of redemption from Paro, so what do? They got together and they say, we'll at least do a little bit. And they start doing chesed one with another. They don't change their names and they do chesed with each other. And they figure that if we do chesed with each other, that will stimulate the chesed from Hashem, and that will be their path to geula. And so the Jewish people look in the mirror, they say, we have nothing, we have no zchuyos, we have no path to redemption, and they say, maybe, if we're nice to one another, maybe if we do chesed with one another, that will be enough to stir up the chesed from Hashem, and that will make us worthy of the redemption. Now he says, you understand the pasuk, nachita bechazdecha mzugalta. When we translate, when Art School translates the pasuk, Art School translates it as with your kindness, namely Hashem's kindness. Says the Chafetz Chaim, no, it's not talking about Hashem's kindness. It's talking about our kindness to each other. Nachita bechazdecha. Hashem says it's because of your kindness, amzugalta, that you were worthy of the geula. Now that in and of itself is a very powerful idea. We sometimes overthink what is required from us. We make life so complicated that you have to do this and you have to do that. And sometimes you boil it down and you realize that it's as simple as being nice to one another. It's as simple as doing simple acts of chesed to one another. You can check in on a neighbor. You can give a ride to someone who needs. You can help someone who's, you can give tzedakah. You can smile at someone. You can hold the door for someone. There are a million opportunities every single day to do chesed to another person. And so sometimes we think that you have to be like a big tzaddik to affect the world and a big tzaddik to bring the geula. Says the Chafetz Chaim, in Mitzrayim, they had nothing. And the only thing they decide to do is, let's be nice to each other. Let's do chesed with each other. And it's in the merit of them being nice to each other that they were worthy of the redemption. That is nachita bechazdecha. Hashem says it's because of your chesed, not my chesed. Your chesed to one another that I redeemed you. So it flips the entire pasuk on its head. We read it as Hashem's chesed. Comes the Chafetz Chaim and says, no, it was our chesed towards each other. He says, now you understand the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Zacharti lach chesed ne'orayich. Hashem says, I remember the chesed of your youth, the kindness of your youth. Now, before this idea of the Chafetz Chaim, if I had asked you to translate that pasuk, you would have said, what was the chesed that we displayed in our infancy as a people? That we followed Hashem into the desert. That's what I always thought that pasuk was talking about. Says the Chafetz Chaim, no. That zacharti la chesed nerayich is Hashem looks at our chesed towards each other. Hashem says, there were many times I wanted to strangle you in the desert. Every time you complained, and every time you know, and yet, zacharti la chesed nerayich, I remember the chesed that you displayed toward each other, and that was enough to save you. So again, in and of itself, it's a very beautiful idea. It's a reminder that sometimes we overcomplicate things, and all Hashem wants from us is to be nice, and to be kind, and to be good, and to be a mensch, and to do chesed to another. And chesed doesn't have to cost you a lot of money. It could be a smile, it could be holding a door, it could be giving a ride. There are so many things that cost you absolutely nothing, not even your time, and it could be the greatest gift in the world. But then I saw on the bottom, and this is after I underlined it. I was just seeing it right before Marv tonight. I didn't even notice it. In the footnote, the Chafetz Chaim points out something unbelievable. He says, now you understand the bracha that we say all the time, of borei nefashos, rabos v'chesronan. Right? So after saying, having a Coke tonight, a water tonight, you say the bracha of borei nefashos. Translate those words for me. Borei nefashot, rabos v'chesronan. So borei, Hashem creates, nefashot, our people. What's rabot v'chesronan? Many and few. How do you translate that? What does that mean? We say it probably 10 times a day, if not more. So what does that mean? Rabos v'chesronan. A lot and a little. Says the Chafetz Chaim, what the bracha is saying, is that Hashem creates some people with more, rabos, and some people with chesronan, and some people with less. Now, why does Hashem create the world that way? Why doesn't Hashem have a socialist society where everyone is completely equal? Why are there people that have more and people have less? The Chafetz Chaim explains, it's because that way we are interdependent with another. In other words, if you have more and I have less, or if I have more and you have less, it means that I need to look out for you and you need to look out for me. It requires a society where we can't be siloed, where we can't just be individuals, but we're forced to be a community. Being a community means you're going to take care of other people. And so therefore, if you look on the bottom, all the way on the bottom of page number 2, the third to last line, he says, "V'zeh kavanas ha-bracha, borei nefashos rabos v'chesronan." Now you understand this bracha. Bishvil l'chayos nefesh kochai. To live as a Jew, sheyichye yachad, chai chevra below b'zbodinus, means to live together with other people and not by yourself. Mimnei shechiyusor shel acha taloi b'chaveru. Because you and I are interconnected. There are going to be times in Jewish history when your family is going to need me, and there are going to be times when my family needs you. That's the circle of life. Rabos v'chesronan. There are always going to be sometimes that people have more, and sometimes that people have left. And that's going to change generation to generation. And the goal of that, Hashem says, because what it means to live as a Jew is not to live in your silo, to not just take care of yourself and ignore everybody else, but to recognize that we are interconnected, that I have to take care of you and you have to take care of me. And so some people have a lot and some people have a little to be able to create that interconnectedness. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that's what the Jewish people did in Mitzrayim. They understood that the only pathway to Geula was when we looked out for each other, when we did chesed for each other. And that's a musr for us, a reminder to us that chesed does not require lots of money. Chesed doesn't require lots of time. You could be kind to someone with the simplest acts. It could be with a smile. It could be with a kind word. It could be with checking in on someone. It could be sending a text message. There are so many hundreds and hundreds of simple ways for us to effectuate chesed every single day. We just need to put on that lens. We need to look at the world through those eyes, and if we do, the same way the Jewish people thousands of years ago were redeemed, nachita bechazdecha, because of the chesed we had to each other. So please God, in our day as well, we will be redeemed by the chesed that we do with each other. That is idea number one. Idea number two comes from Rav Dessler. It's really not Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler is quoting the Ramchal, but Rav Dessler has the following insight. In our parsha that we're going to read this coming Shabbos, the pasuk is going to say, again, the Jewish people leave. Vayibishalach Paro, the Jewish people leave. And then when the Jewish people actually leave and they're gone forever, remember Paro thinks they might come back. So the pasuk says, Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim ki barach ha'am. It's told to the king of Mitzrayim that the Jewish people barach. What is the word barach?
Ran away.
They escaped. Now that word comes up earlier in the Torah, says Rav Dessler. When Rivka is talking to Yaakov, Rivka says to her, Ve'ata b'ni shma b'koli barach l'cha. Rivka tells Yaakov, you better run away. Now in both cases, both in the case of Rivka and Yaakov, and in the case in our Parsha, there are actually two different words used. If you pay attention to the reading this morning, this coming Shabbos, there's the word barach, which means to run away, and there's the word of yitziah, latzeit. What does the word latzeit mean?
To go out.
Now what's the difference between barach and latzeit? Barach means to like run, and let's say it means to leave, right? So if I told you to run out of this room, you'd all get up and you'd start running like I ran last Sunday, or like sometimes when there's a dog behind me, right? So you'd run. Yitziah, if I told you to leave the room, what would you do? You'd get up, you'd peacefully walk away. In both the case of Rivka and Yaakov, and in the case in our Parsha, first it says barach, and then it follows up with the word yitziah. Why do you need both words? And what's the difference between the two of them? So Rav Dessler understands the following. If you look here, I have it boxed in. Quotes the Ramchal. Yesh bricha v'yesh yitziah. He says this on page number 3. He says there are times when you have to run, and there are times when you walk. And he says the difference between the two of those is how you are going to change and how you're going to do tshuva. When you have to do tshuva, when you want to change, sometimes you have to do what I'll call is have a clean break. You have to run as far away from that bad habit as you possibly can. And that's the only way you're going to change. What we would call maybe cold turkey, or you just have to run as fast as you can. So, you know, an example is that if someone has an addiction, I shouldn't use that word, I'm not a psychologist. If someone has a problem where they can't stop looking at things they're not supposed to, so you would tell the person, first and foremost, you got to like get off the computer. Right, you got to turn off the TV. You have to put up barriers between you and the device that's causing you to do things you shouldn't be doing. You can't dabble in it. You can't, little by little, I will, I won't. You got to just cut it loose. And you have to disconnect yourself completely from whatever that Yitzhahara is. Then, once you've had that clean break and you've been boreach, you've run away from it as far as possible, we all know cold turkey doesn't work long term. Extremes don't work long term. So then you got to come back and you have to rebuild your ability to responsibly use technology, responsibly have a phone. Maybe you're going to put on tag. Maybe you're going to put on filters. Maybe, right? But you're going to rebuild yourself in a responsible and respectable fashion. So sometimes you just have to go cold turkey. You have to say, I'm not going to have any l'chaims at all at the kiddush. And then after I've gone enough time, when I've disconnected myself from that Yitzhahara, now I can rebuild it in a healthy and appropriate way with moderation. Says Rav Dessler, that is exactly what's happening here. If you look on the second paragraph there, on the bottom of page 3, he says, Misha roashu min nutzach b'milchama, someone who's battling the Yitzhahara, mishtadil li natzil aydei bricha. The first thing you have to do, he says, is run away. If you see that your inclination, your evil inclination has grabbed hold of you, that you're succumbing to temptation and desire, into things that are self-destructive, the first thing you have to do is run away from it. But then what happens? Again, you can't, then you got to slow down. You got to come back, and you have to do it in a slow, in responsible fashion. So in the case of, let's say, technology, we would say the first and foremost, sometimes you got to just go cold turkey. You're not going to use a computer. You're not going to use a TV. You're not going to use your cell phone. You just have to disconnect yourself from it. And then once you've cracked the Yetzer Hara a little bit, then you're going to come back and slowly and methodically with Yetziah. You're going to go slowly and you're going to rebuild it in a responsible way. Says Rav Dessler, that's what happened in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. In the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Jewish people had to have a hard, clean break from Mitzrayim. They needed to run away as quickly and as fast as possible, because we know they weren't just physically leaving Egypt. What were they also doing? Spiritually leaving Egypt. They were entrenched and completely consumed by Egyptian culture and Egyptian society. And to just walk away slowly, we even saw they wanted to come back, maybe the cucumbers, maybe the watermelons, life wasn't so bad in Egypt. And so Hashem says, just run, get away from it as fast as possible. But then we know that that doesn't sustain itself long term. And so then, after running away, bechipazon, why do you think the word bechipazon is used so much in this story? Run fast, Hashem says. Okay, I couldn't have walked, I couldn't have gone slowly. No, because when you want a break, sometimes you have to have a real break. You have to say, I'm not doing this anymore. Done. I'm going to go a week, I'm going to go a month, I'm going to go 6 months, I'm just not going to do it. Then I'm going to come back. And once I've done that, now I'm going to have to rebuild it slowly. He says, aval achar kach, page number 4. Keshekanu amadrega b'mesiris nafsham. Once you've already had that break, then ubnei Yisrael yotzim biyad ramah. It uses the word yitziyah, because now what do we do after leaving Mitzrayim? Do we go right to receive the Torah? Do we go right to Eretz Yisrael? No. What do we have? We have Sfiras Omer, right? We have days between leaving Mitzrayim until we eventually receive the Torah. What's the purpose of those days? Right? We left Egypt. We're ready for the Torah. No, we weren't ready for the Torah. We had that clean break. We had that flash inspiration where Hashem says, get rid of the phone, get rid of the... Now that that flash of inspiration is gone, Hashem says, okay, now you're going to spend some days rebuilding and slowly and responsibly and meticulously in a responsible fashion. And that's the difference, he says, by Barach and Yetziah. Sometimes when you want to break a bad habit, you have to run away from the bad habit. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Who were we interviewing? We were just interviewing this on Behind the Bima. I don't know, it's all a blur because we did a lot of interviews recently. You'll listen. One of the interviews we just had, we were talking about this exact point. And we were talking about someone who changed. And he said, I said, like, how do you do this? He says, sometimes you just got to jump in. Sometimes you just got to jump in the deep end. You know, people overthink. Oh, if I start, maybe I won't get a week. Maybe I won't finish. Maybe this will happen. Maybe that will happen. Sometimes the best way to start something is just to start it, to jump right into it. Okay, and after that moment of flash inspiration, okay, now I have to figure out how to sustain it. But sometimes you're going to have analysis paralysis. You're never going to get there in the first place. That, says Rav Dessler, is exactly what's happening here. That's what happened with Yaakov and Rivka. If you want to change, sometimes you have to be willing to do dramatic change to make a point and to make an imprint on you. And then once you've done that, then you do the Yetziah. Then you go back and you rebuild it in a methodical fashion. That is the two words that are used both in our story and in the story of Yaakov and Rivka, of Barach in Yetziah. Sometimes you have to run fast, but then you have to follow it up by running slow, because if you run fast all the time, you know what happens? I saw this all the time. I saw this on Sunday. I was running the race. So the night before, my running coach texted me this piece of advice. He says, I'm warning you right now, everyone's going to run out too fast. He says, you got to slow down. And it wasn't easy, because the first part of the marathon was a downward slope. And it was very easy. You're feeling good. Your legs are fresh. You just hydrated. And you're like, you're feeling like $1 million that first mile. And the whole time, I'm like, stay slow, stay slow, stay slow. And all those people that blew by me, you know where they were, mile 4, 5, 6? They were gasping for air. They were plotzing. And everyone who started slow, by mile 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, we were blowing by them. So if you run too fast, you burn out. Sometimes you got to start out a little fast just to get that jolt, But then if slow and steady wins the game. Slow and steady wins the game. So first you need barach, but then after that, you got to slow yourself down, you got to pace yourself, and you got to make sure that it's sustainable, because if it's not sustainable, then you're going to cap out at mile 7 and not finish strong like some other people did. That is idea number 2. So idea number 1 was the beautiful idea from the Chafetz Chaim about chesed, that chesed brings redemption. Idea number 2 comes that sometimes we need to run, not walk. But then after you run, you got to make sure that you make sure that it's sustainable and that it can sustain itself long term. That is Rav Dessler. Idea number 3, you'll see here, I brought to you the cover page. It's from a sefer called Tzitzim Uprachim. It was published last week, essentially. And it is Divrei Torah from, as you see here, Harav Mordechai Ginsburg Shlita, Rosh Ram, B'Yeshiva Chachmas HaTorah de Satmer in Williamsburg. So how do I come to Rav Mordechai Ginsburg, the Ram in Yeshiva Satmer of Williamsburg? So if you look here on the bottom, it says that this was published, L'Dagel Simchas Nesuei Bino, that this was published for his son's wedding, HaChasana Chashuva Muflag, Harav Chaim Shlomo. So this is, those of you know, that when I was in Memphis, we had a Satmer Chassid next door to us that I became very, very friendly with and very close with. And his son is getting married next week in London. And Be'ezras Hashem, that's where I'm going to be next week. That's why Shir's going to be on Monday night. I was going to surprise him, but I decided not to. So I told him a few days ago that I'm going to be there. It'll be very meaningful for both of us. So he sent me this. This was a sefer that was published for his son's Ofruf. It's obviously very meaningful for me. His daughter's yurtzeit was today. That was one of the names I said at the beginning. So that's why our learning is for Aliyas Neshama, for Hindabas Mordechai, that it, her father is the one who published this sefer. So when he sent it to me this week, I said, I have to use a Devar Torah from here. I want to use something from here. And lo and behold, he has the most beautiful word. Go to page number 6. Torah does something very strange. It's hard for me to fully express this without you seeing the psukim fleshed out. But let me set the stage. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the Yamsuf. The Jewish people panic. Moshe says, don't worry, Hashem's going to take care of you. Hashem says, Moshe, take your stick, put it over the water, and the water is going to split. The water splits, the Jewish people walk through. As the Jewish people walk through, they see the Egyptians following behind them. They panic once again. Hashem says, Moshe, put your stick back out, and the water is going to come back. The water comes back, drowns all the Egyptians. Okay, that's the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Anyone who wants to fully experience it, I always tell you, go tomorrow morning to the gazebo at the end of Palmetto Park Road and just stand there for a second. I want you to look at Palmetto Park Road, right? You could see until the drawbridge. And I want you to just picture like a pack of Nazis or a pack of Cossacks or a pack of Egyptians charging at you. And then I want you to look at the water and realize that you have nowhere to go. And like that moment of panic that you'll have in a second, that's what the Jewish people felt. Like this was real, okay? Anyways, at the end of the story, the pasuk says, "Vayei Moshe es yado al hayam, vayashev ha'am lifnos boker le'isano," that Moshe Rabbeinu sticks out his hand again to the water, and the water returns le'itano. Eitan means, anyone named Eitan here? Power, strength. So the water returns to its power. However, the Medjer says, if you look on the underline, the Medjer says that the word Eitano comes from another word, Tanai. What does the word Tanai mean? Condition. So the pasuk says that Hashem made a condition with the water. Sheyikra lifnei b'nei Yisrael. Hashem says, I'm making a condition with you that you are going to split for the Jewish people. So asks Rav Ginsburg, I don't understand. When should the Torah have told us that Hashem made a condition with the water to split? Should Hashem have told us that when he split the water or after the water already split when Moshe put it back together? Like if you had to put that comment by Chazal one place, where would you have put it? So of course you would have put it at the beginning. You would have told us when Moshe goes to split the water, Hashem says, oh, before you split it, Moshe, I'm making a condition with you. You have to do a good job. Why would the Torah tell us about that after the water's already back together? It's like out of place completely. So he says, let me give you an answer. And he quotes the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin tells us, Shira Pinchas ben Yair Karas Hayardein Gimel Pa'amim, that there was a Rebbe named Pinchas ben Yair who split the Jordan River 3 times. And the Gemara there says, Kama nafish gavra mi Moshe. How much greater is Pinchas ben Yair than Moshe? Because Moshe only split the water once And Pinchas ben Yair split the water three times. So what in the world's going on here? That there's someone greater than Moshe? That Moshe, you know, it's like trash talking on the basketball court. You think you can only hit one free throw? I hit five straight free throws, right? Like, would you go to Michael Jordan and trash talk with Michael Jordan? Right, Michael Jordan sitting here in this room, right, you probably do it on the golf course all the time. But if Michael Jordan were, imagine Michael Jordan sitting here. And I look at Jordan and I say, heard you missed a free throw yesterday. Well, I hit five in a row, I'm better than you. He'd laugh in my face. So Pinchas ben Yair is greater than Moshe. That Moshe only did it once, Pinchas ben Yair did it three times. What in the world is going on here? So he quotes the Noam Elimelech. And the Noam Elimelech says the following idea. He says, the first time you do a miracle, it's a huge deal. The first time you break nature is a very big deal. It's very hard. It's monumental. But once you've broken it the first time, then the second, third, fourth, fifth times are much easier. Let me give you an example. Again, we're in the running mode because I ran the marathon this past Sunday. Roger Bannister. So on May 6th, 1954, Roger Bannister did something that no one had ever done before, which is that he broke the four-minute mile in 3 minutes, 54 seconds and 4/10 of a second. Now, nobody had done that before. People have been trying it for a long time. Roger Bannister breaks it on May 6, 1954. You know what happened 46 days later? 46 days later, someone else did. A guy by the name of John Landy came along and broke the 4-minute mile again. And then in the subsequent years, thousands of people have broken the 4-minute mile. So what happens? What's pshat? The answer is sometimes the first person to do something is really hard to do it. But once he does it and he shows that it's possible to do it, then it becomes easier for everybody else. So everyone thought it was impossible to break the 4-minute mile. Roger Bannister did it. Now all of a sudden it psychologically changed everyone else. Everyone else realized, wait a second, this thing that we thought was impossible, we suddenly realize is possible. And if he did it, then I can do it well. As well, it means that the only thing holding back people from breaking the 4-minute mile was nothing physical. They were physically capable of breaking the 4-minute mile. What was holding them back? Their mind. I always tell people, running is 90% mental and 10% physical. And I really believe that. I really believe that. Right? The entire race is your body versus your mind. One's telling you to quit and the other's telling you to keep going. And there's a fight that's going on. That's why I love running. Because you're only competing with one person. You're competing with yourself, right? Physically, people were able to do it. It's not that people got stronger in 46 days. They were able to do it the whole time. Psychologically, in the deep recesses of their head, they said, if no one's ever done it, it can't be done. But the second someone showed them that it could be done, now all of a sudden, the floodgates opened and everyone was able to do it. Says the Noam Elimelech, Rav Ginsburg quotes it here, that's exactly what happened with the splitting of the sea. What does it mean that Pinchas ben Yair was able to split the sea three times? Doesn't mean that he was better than Moshe. He says, Aval, Kevan Shekvar Nasa Neis Pam Achas, but once Moshe did that miracle the first time, once Moshe recognized that it's possible that with great sacrifice, Mesiras Nefesh, you can override nature, Az Yicholim HaTzadikim Achar Kach Lasos Yoser Bekal Es HaNeis, then it became easier for every righteous person afterwards to be able to do that miracle. And that, he says, is what it means, Kama Nafshi Gavri. Doesn't mean that he's better than him. It means meheichan baha koach. Where did Pinchas ben Yair get the ability to split the sea? Mi Moshe, from Moshe Rabbeinu. And he says, now you understand what it means that the Shem tells about the condition after Moshe Rabbeinu already returned the sea. Hashem wasn't talking about this splitting of the sea. Hashem wasn't saying, oh Moshe, after you split the sea, I'm going to make the sea promise that they're going to split. Sea already split. No, what it means is that Hashem tells the sea, now that you split once, I'm going to show you that you're going to split other times throughout history. Because once you do something one time, you're going to see that it's going to be easier to do it going forward as well. And that's the bottom of page number 6. He says, Lefi zem muvan me'od lama dafka achshav. Now we understand why now does Hashem tell the sea you're going to split. Ki achshav, because now, achar shemoshe Rabbeinu kara, Hayam, Pam Achas. Once Moshe did it once, Yesh Tanai Chadash Al Hayam, there's a new condition for the sea, Shekol Pam Shetzadik Echad Yiratze Lasos Neis, that any other time a righteous person comes, that the sea is going to split. That's his understanding of the Pesukim. To me, there's a much broader issue here, and I assume you know where I'm getting at, which is that a lot of times the only thing that's holding us back, Chevra, is our minds. The only thing that's holding us back is a perceived limitation that we place upon ourselves. Sometimes the only reason we can't do something is because we've led ourselves to believe that we cannot do it. Now, I don't think I'm running a 4-minute mile, nor do I think I'm going to dunk a basketball tomorrow. Of course, there are things that are simply beyond my physical capability. But within the range of my talents and my abilities and the gifts that Hashem has given me, we always are able to stretch ourselves a little bit more. Running teaches me that. And I'm sorry to keep on using that analogy, but I think it's such a great analogy for life. The best part about running is that every time you think you're done, you have a little bit left in you. Every time I thought I was done in the race, you just keep putting one foot in front of the other and you realize you have so much more in you. And I realized the only thing that was telling me I was done was not my body. My body was fine. It was my mind. You ask, you, and I happen to be like a fanatic about this stuff. Navy SEALs. In my other life, I still think I could like train with Navy SEALs. Me and Tiger Woods. But like, I really believe, like, if you want to know my bucket, that might be at the top of my bucket, my non-Jewish bucket list, would be going to Coronado and training with Navy SEALs one day. Because there's a piece of me, maybe not the push-ups part or any of the upper body part, but I think I could like go toe-to-toe with them, right? If you read, and I've like read a lot about this because I'm a little shtickle obsessed with it, certainly previously, you know, in my old life, everything about Navy SEALs training is that they try to help you realize that that whenever you think you're done, you have more left in you. And the only thing that has ever held you back is your mind. And so that's, I think, exactly what the Noam Elimelech is saying here from Rav Ginsburg, is that we think sometimes we are not capable of things, but in truth, we are capable of so much more. Once Moshe Rabbeinu showed that the sea could split, then Pinchas ben Yair was able to do it. Once Roger Bannister showed that you could break the 4-minute mile, then thousands of other people were going to do it. We have that all the time. That's why I love biographies and autobiographies, because I love learning about other people. When I see that someone else can do something, I realize that I can do it too. Learn from other people. Look at other people. Use other people as role models. If there's something that's holding you back that you say, I can't do it, talk about it with someone. Maybe look at someone who was able to do that. See someone who broke through and figure out for yourself how I could break through as well. Because oftentimes the only thing that's holding us back is our mind. All right, went over. I got a little excited about that last one. All right, so we saw 3 ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one from the Chafetz Chaim about the power of chesed. Idea number two came from Rav Dessler. The reminder of how we're supposed to change. Sometimes you got to run. Sometimes you got to go cold turkey. If you dabble, you're never going to really change. Sometimes you just have to cut yourself loose. But, then eventually you have to come back and rebuild it in a healthy, sustainable way. Because running all the time, you're going to burn out. You got to run a little bit, but then you got to do in a slow, methodical passion because that's how you're going to win the race. Idea number three came from Rav Ginsburg, Roger Bannister. Moshe Rabbeinu was the first Roger Bannister. Moshe Rabbeinu showed that the sea could split. And once he showed that, then Pinchas ben Yair and other people throughout history, Yeshua, showed the same thing in us in our lives as well. The only thing sometimes that holds us back is our own perceived limitations, and that is what's holding us back from breaking through. I give us all a bracha that whatever's holding you back in life, you should be like Roger Bannister. You should break through it, serve as a model for other people so that we each push each other towards the finish line. And with that, I wish everyone a good Shabbat.